Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Thanks very much for tuning in. Glad you're with us this morning. We're also very pleased to have with us here in the studio as our guest, Roger Ebert, the Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic of the Chicago Sun-Times. He's here in Champaign-Urbana to host his second annual Overlooked Film Festival. The films are being shown at the Virginia Theater in Champaign, and then there are also several panels that are taking place at the Illini Union. The panels are open to the public, and so if you're interested in attending, you can certainly do that. And, of course, the films are there to be seen. You have to buy a ticket, but I think that there are tickets available for all of them, and there are three days worth of the festival yet to go. So we perhaps we'll talk just a little bit about some of the movies there that you can see and talk about some other things as well and take whatever questions you have. In addition to writing for the Sun-Times, Roger Ebert has a syndicated television program, Roger Ebert and the Movie. He is the author of 15 books, including the annual editions of Roger Ebert's Movie Yearbook. And he's also done many other things in the way of writing and lecturing. He's been a lecturer for a number of years on film at University of Chicago, film critic of WLS-TV in Chicago, and he is a graduate of the University of Illinois.
That was born in Urbana.
And he was born in Urbana, worked for the Daily Illini and the News Gazette.
That's right.
Before going on to the Sun-Times. And if you have questions, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, thank you very much. I know that you're busy. I appreciate you coming over and being with
us. It's a pleasure. It was fun to talk to you the last time I was in town.
Would you like to take a minute or two and talk about some of the movies that will be shown?
I'd like to begin by plugging something that's at 10:30 this morning. And, of course, we're going to lose all of our listeners because if they're within walking distance or quick commuting distance of the English building, they might want to go over there. But I'm just going to talk about this. It's a free screening at 10:30 today of As I See It, which is a tribute to the great director Fred Zinnemann by his son Tim Zinnemann, who's going to be there in person. And, of course, Fred Zinnemann directed Oklahoma, which we're showing on Sunday afternoon at the Virginia in 70mm, 30 frame per second, Todd A.O. vision, and we can talk about that later. But if you're interested in seeing this documentary about Zinnemann, who made A Man for All Seasons and many other great films, it's at 10:30 in 160 Multimedia Classroom of the English Building. So now that everybody is rushing away from their radios, we can continue to talk. I was just talking to Nate Cohen, who is the director of the festival, and he was saying that last year's festival was very successful, much more successful than we could have hoped. And this year, ticket sales are running way ahead of last year. So it's a big success, and we're really thrilled. Although we do, it's a big theater. I think there are 1,500 seats in the Virginia Theater. So we do have tickets available at $5 for everything that's still being held over the weekend. And the schedule is at ebertfest.com.
Hmm. There are probably a lot of people who are listening who have never been in the Virginia Theater. When I first came here to town to live, it was still a working theater, and I saw a lot of movies there. But since has been closed. There have been some stage shows there. But for anyone who has not been in that theater, at least you should go and take in some movies just for the sake of seeing it.
It's certainly part of my history. As a child growing up in Champaign-Urbana, I went to the Virginia frequently. And my father saw the Marx Brothers on stage there. It was a vaudeville house. It was originally called the RKO Virginia, and that stood for Radio Keith Orpheum, which was a vaudeville circuit out of Chicago. And you would start as a vaudeville act in Chicago and go out to the RKO vaudeville wheel, as it was called. So through the Virginia Theater passed not only the Marx Brothers, but Al Jolson and W.C. Fields and all the great entertainers of the 1920s. Oh, we have, this is Paul Cox. You haven't met Paul Cox.
We have a special guest. Good to meet you.
Hi.
One of, maybe, again, we should mention that as part of the festival, in addition to showing movies, you've invited people to come and directors, actors, people to come and talk about the movies that are being shown.
Yes, every screening is value added because not only do we show you the movie, but we then have a discussion afterwards with the filmmaker or with producer, writer, director. And, you know, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to have Paul Cox in my hometown because we have met everywhere else in the world. We were in Calcutta in November when his latest film played at the Calcutta Film Festival. And At 10 o'clock tonight at the Virginia, we're going to be showing A Woman's Tale, which Paul can tell us about, but which I think is one of the most powerful films I've ever seen in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And to have A Woman's Tale with Paul Cox is personally for me a great achievement of this festival.
Well, there you go. We're pleased that you could come over and spend a little time with us. Please tell us about the film.
Well, it's now some 10 years ago that it was made, and recently I've made a similar sort of film to take it on from there. It's a celebration of age, and consequently is a celebration of life. And it's also a celebration of people and characters that are never very rarely celebrated in the cinema. So usually we have young people, spunky young people, and rich people and all these sort of characters. But here we have a woman that's actually dying, and she is the great protagonist and gives us a sense of life by the time she dies.
She's played by an actress named Sheila Florence, who won the Academy Award in Australia.
The great irony is she was given 8 weeks to live when we started to shoot, so I had to be very fast. Then the insurance fell through, then there was no money, and then we lost another weekend. She said, well, I won't make it. And I said, well, if you die on me, you'll kill me, because we had to actually borrow all the money in a great hurry. So she was supposed to, in the middle of the film, she almost died. We had no insurance. It's one of those films you really had to make. This was too important. And at the end, when we finished, she lived for another 3 months, 4 months, and then got Best Actress of the Year, of course, because her performance was absolutely stunning. Mm. You know, it was real. Everything was real.
Well, how do you direct someone in a role that they are not only playing, but they're also living?
Well, it directs itself. I mean, this is one of those films where I said, I always gave the film to her. This is your film. Mm-hmm. The other people around, I always work with similar sort of people in terms of actors and crew. But we have never been so emotional whilst making it. We're now dealing with the real thing. And after all, death is the only reality left in this world. You know, everything else seems to become totally unreal or surreal as we go on. Mm-hmm. So it was very potent 4 weeks that had to be done in a great hurry.
One thing that I'd like to mention about the film, which, by the way, I think I said is at 10 o'clock tonight, right? So I hope people do come over to the Virginia. In fact, we can get into the whole schedule for today. But this is not a movie that takes place for 2 hours in a hospital bed. This woman is filled with life. She lives more in the last days of her life than most of us are given to live in a whole lifetime. And she is totally involved with the people of her neighborhood, with the conditions of where she lives, with a prostitute who lives nearby who she becomes interested in, with the people who pass through. She is engaged, and she is very funny sometimes and very spunky and very filled with life. This is not a film about dying. This is a film about living.
It's also extremely entertaining, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's fun.
There's even mileage in death. It's extremely. People always say, that's entertainment. This is, for instance, if you try to get money, you go to somebody with money and say, I want to make a film about this woman who's got another 5 or 6 weeks to live. She's very funny. She's got a lot to give us. They will say, you're insane. You know, you just cannot do that sort of thing. There is no mileage in death. Mm-hmm. But the irony of this film was it's one of my most successful films. It even had a release in America. I don't know how far it went, because you never hear after you've sold the film. But it was, for instance, terribly successful in Japan. There is nobody in Japan actually thinks about what's going to happen when I'm 60. They used to look after one another, and now this is all changing. So in Japan, they have this film still running in Japan, very successful. So there was a film we made for very little money in a great hurry, in the face of death, and has become actually the biggest money spinner, not for me, because I had to sell out everything, but for the distributor, which is a great irony of filmmaking, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting that you, almost with a film like this, it seems as if you have to lure people in, as if you can't quite. Maybe you're not sure.
What
you really
want to
say what? Yeah, you don't. You don't want to. Maybe you don't want to tell them exactly what it's about, because if you did that, you'd think, no, that's going to turn them off. But you know, now if I can get people in to see the film, they will like it, and afterwards they'll say, well, I'm really glad that I saw it.
I can tell you I would never, ever have made any films if I hadn't had great faith in you and in you, in the individual, in the audience. As an audience altogether, I have no faith in that. The public, they've been conditioned in such a degree that if somebody says this is good, they'll go. But if you have respect for the individual in the audience, there is always people. I always rely on word of mouth. I never ever go, and I don't have publicity people. I don't do anything. It always happens by word of mouth.
I get so frustrated sometimes by my attempts to convince people why they might like a movie that, in terms of its description, sounds like something they don't want to see. I mean, in Hollywood, they have this phrase called high concept. Well, what is a high concept movie? In my opinion, it's a low concept movie. High concept means a movie that can be described in one sentence, such as Philadelphia street kid becomes heavyweight champion of the world. That would be Rocky. Well, most good movies cannot be described in one sentence. If they can be described in one sentence, they can be made in one shot. So when you look at a common thread for the titles in the Overlook Film Festival, frequently it's, you could describe any of these films in the same way. Sounds like something you wouldn't want to see. But if we can grab you and get you into that theater, you're never going to forget this film, and you're going to tell all of your friends that they should see it. The festival started yesterday with a black-and-white silent film about a homeless person in New York, film made in 1989. Now, if I go out to the people who are lined up at the, what's the name of the Savoy Cinemas? Okay, they're all lined up to see movies about who's going to go to the prom. You know, every week we get a teenage movie involving who's going to go to the prom. And I say, wouldn't you rather see a black and white silent film from 1989 about a homeless person? And their answer is, no, I don't think I would. And this movie is so infinitely more entertaining, more absorbing, better than what they're going to pay $8 to see. And how can you convince people that? Or Grave of the Fireflies, it's an animated film from Japan. Well, everybody wants to go see Pokemon, which is, you know, this brain-damaged Japanese animated film about brightly colored spheres zapping each other. How about a movie about a brother who tries to take care of his younger sister after they become homeless after the firebombing of Kobe? Well, that doesn't sound like what anybody would like to see. But or American Movie, last night's movie at 10 o'clock, a documentary about a guy in Milwaukee who wants to make films. It got a standing ovation. And A Woman's Tale, 10 o'clock tonight, the same kind of film. Do you want to see a film about an old lady who has a few weeks to live? Well, you might think you don't, and yet I've never forgotten this film. I was so happy that we were able to arrange to have it at the Overlook Film Festival. It's one of the films that makes my life, that makes me think that my life hasn't been wasted. I mean, what kind of a job is it for an adult, Paul, to just go to the movies? That's my job. My mother's friends, I'm from Champaign-Urbana, my mother's friends would ask her, and what about Roger? Is he still just going to the movies? But, and when you see A Woman's Tale and when you can share it with other people, a great filmmaker like Paul Cox, then it makes your job worth doing.
But isn't it also incredible that film, I regard that as the greatest gift to man. Now, it's the most abused and misused medium on earth. If a film can enrich your life, you go out, a good film you never forget. I remember a film called Shadows of Our Forgotten Ancestors. I saw that years and years ago. It always lingered and had a definite influence on what I did in my life. It made me actually decide to become a filmmaker. Now, these films are all disappearing. You really have to look very hard to find a film that actually penetrates the psyche and lingers within and travels with you. Film has the power to do this. So there's an enormous division between film and the industry. They are two totally different things, because film is more or less like a product you buy in a supermarket now. It has really become something quite vulgar, which is an enormous pity, because film can actually... look at the Goebbels in the Second World War. The Germans already had it well worked out, and it had enormous power. If Hitler or Goebbels had been able to go on daily talkback shows, the Third Reich would probably still be marching. I mean, the power of film is extraordinary. And what is it being used for? It's actually to denigrate human race. It's actually patronizing people. I very rarely go to the cinema these days because I feel patronized. It's something that could enrich our lives in the most extraordinary way.
You know, my my late partner, Gene Siskel, would ask this question, which later became solidified as Siskel's test. Is this movie more interesting than a documentary of the same actors having lunch? And most movies do not pass that test. They are given characters to play and lines to say that are not as interesting as they could be on their own just sitting around.
Mm. I should probably, for anyone who might have tuned in the last little bit here, introduce again our guests here for this part of Focus 580. Film critic Roger Ebert writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, and he's here in Champaign-Urbana as a host of the second annual Overlooked Film Festival. And also here in studio with us is Paul Cox. He's a film director from Australia, and he is director of A Woman's Tale, one of the films that will be shown that, in fact, tonight at 10 o'clock. And the films are being shown at the Virginia Theater in Champaign.
Paul's on a panel at 11 o'clock this morning, too, aren't you?
What panel is it, actually?
Oh, I don't know. One of those panels.
It's about women in film, I thought.
Well, and you may have
that I know very much.
Women in films. It says so right here on the piece of paper I have.
You know, it's an Australian evening at the Virginia because the 7 o'clock movie is a comedy called The Castle about a family that a man's home is his castle, and these people love their house, even though it's located inches from a jumbo jet runway in Melbourne. And, Paul, since you're here, I said in my introductory remarks yesterday about The Castle that if one only knew about Australia from Australian films, one would occasionally get a film like A Woman's Tale, which is kind of Shakespearean. But on the other hand, most Australian films paint your homeland as occupied exclusively by extremely strange people. I mean, it's almost like the Australian film in general shows you as bonkers.
Well, they have this idea that films should be quirky, so they create quirky characters. And Australia is the last country in the world where you would have quirky characters walking the streets. It's a fairly normal sort of setup. But it became very popular in Australia to make films with quirky characters. Otherwise, you couldn't get the money. That became after Muriel's Wedding and all those sort of films.
Let me try to get a trend here. In Japan, which is a fairly puritanical society, pornographic comic books are a mass medium. Are you saying that in Australia, which is a very straight-laced society, weird movies are performing the same function? In other words,
I think it's changing again, but it was definitely a trend. But The Castle stands out from all this because it was done by a very funny man who's actually a very fine comic who had never made a movie. That's why I think visually they should have had at least a proper DOP to shoot the film because it just went off and did it, which is, of course, marvelous. But the film was amazingly successful in Australia. It's one of the hits of the Australian cinema. And it's actually a very poorly shot film, but it's very funny and it hits the thing right on the head. It's exactly what is what the film industry is about, mm-hmm. and what the heart of Australia is about. You know, there's always the little battler backing the underdog in principle, but nobody does it.
Would you like to maybe talk to some people who are listening?
Sure.
You want to do that? Okay, you'll need to
Can we just take a second to talk about the other two films?
Sure.
If people want to go over to the Virginia Theater, at 1 o'clock we're showing a documentary called Legacy, which played in the Sundance Festival in January, and it's about a welfare family from Chicago, African-American welfare family that is struck with tragedy about 5 years ago when one of its most promising members, a kid who has a scholarship to go to college, is shot dead in the street. And this is a catalyst for the family to pull themselves together, and it's an extraordinary story of how that family changes in 5 years. And that's Legacy at 1 o'clock. And at 4 o'clock, we're showing The Terrorist by Santosh Sivan, a young Indian director. It's about a young woman of 17 who volunteers to become a living bomb, to strap explosives around her middle and walk up to a politician and blow them both up. It's based on an assassination in India, but no country is named or no person is named. It's about the last 4 days before her rendezvous with destiny. And The actress, Ayesha Dakkar, has come all the way from Bombay and is going to be on stage after that film, along with its producer, Mark Burton, from New York. And then at 7 o'clock, The Castle, which we were just talking about. And at 10 o'clock, Paul Cox's film, A Woman's Tale. And people come all day. You just see them walking. We have a little street fair going on over there. We have barbecue and pizza available, and they've blocked off a block of the street, so it's like a Taste of Champaign-Urbana. You can leave the movie, grab a quick barbecue chicken sandwich, and race back inside. And people are coming all day long, seeing three movies, four movies in a row.
Well, we can see what's on the minds of the people who are listening. If you would grab a pair of headphones and put them on, that way you can hear the callers. We'll start with someone here locally. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you for bringing your Overlook Film Festival to Urbana. I went last year and went again this year, of course. I have one question. What are your dates for next year?
That's a question I don't have the answer to. I don't think we've decided. There's some problem with trying to keep out of the way of other deadlines, such as final exams and things like that.
Right.
And Nancy Casey of the College of Communications, who is the producer of the festival, is right on top of that, and she's probably looking at her calendar as we speak.
Okay. Well, it would be very nice once you get those dates if you might, you know, flash them to the public so that we can put that aside for next year.
We will flash it at ebertfest.com, which is the website being maintained by the university.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
And my other question is, can you include the Art Theater in the film festival? It's only a block away, and they show wonderful films all year long. And I think that and you've done lovely things for the Art Theater. So I'm hoping that they could be included next year, perhaps.
You know, I'm going to look into that because I grew up at the Art Theater. That's where I saw my first that's where I saw Citizen Kane. That's where I saw the first films that I saw by Bergman and Fellini and the English Angry Young Men, Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, my first Cassavetes film. So the Art Theater is like a shrine to me. And you may remember that I did participate in the benefit to try to get them some seats.
Paul,
let me tell you what happened at the Art Theater, because I know that you and I are both amused by exhibition experiences. We were just sharing a memory of a movie that we attended in Calcutta that was not shown under ideal circumstances. I'm sad to say it was yours. The Art Theater had some seats that were really pretty run down. I mean, and the springs were coming through and tearing your pants. And they bought some new seats. Now, the Art Theater doesn't have a lot of money, and they bought some new seats. And unfortunately, what was not realized until the seats were installed is that the seats were designed for a floor that was raked differently than the Art Theater's floor. So that the problem then became at the Art that when you sat in the seat, you kept sliding forward out of your seat onto the floor, and everybody had to watch the movie while bracing themselves against the seat in front of them with their feet. And so, obviously, we had to start all over again with new seats, and they had a benefit. And now it's a wonderful place to see movies. And I'm going to take that very seriously. I know that the Virginia is our home for a number of reasons, including the fact that the festival has been instrumental in getting the theater renovated and made into part of the Champaign Park District and preserved. But it seems to me that some kind of sidebar or second-run situation, maybe we could show the movies a second time at the Art for like $2 or something instead of $5, but you don't get to meet the director, or maybe that wouldn't be right either. I'm thinking off the top of my head, but that's a very good suggestion. And here in Champaign-Urbana, where the Princess, which later became the cinema, is gone, the co-ed theaters have just been torn down, the Orpheum is gone, the Rialto is gone, the Thunderbird is gone, and if you're on campus, you have to go 5 to 10 miles in order to see a movie.
Right.
Within the city limits of Champaign-Urbana, you've got the Art Theater, and that's it. And I'm glad that if one movie theater could survive, it is the Art Theater, because it's showing great films. It recently showed Princess Mononoke, the great animated film from Japan. So it's a shrine. It's a shrine to what's best in the cinema rather than what's cheap and easy and tawdry.
I hope you give them a full share, you know, the $6 rate. And you know, I think there's so many good movies to go around that you could probably double what you pick for.
No, I think I recognize your voice. Aren't you on the recording machine from the art theater? The answering machine? I'm just joking.
Yeah, sometimes I do call and ask what the movies are.
Oh, okay. Well, I agree with you, and I'm going to talk to my advisors about that, Nancy and Nate, who really do run the festival.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks
for the call.
It's a great idea.
Okay.
Let's talk with someone else here in Muhammad, line number two. Hello.
Hello. I really like your idea of second run over at the art. I've been telling people about Grave of the Fireflies, and I would like to show it to my family, but the chances of them seeing it now are pretty small. It was a wonderful movie. I'm glad you brought it. You mentioned in a previous radio interview that your father had seen the Marx Brothers at the Virginia.
So he told me. Are you going to tell me that he was lying?
No. Groucho wrote an autobiography called Groucho and Me.
Uh-huh.
In there, he claims that the Marx Brothers formed the act that we all know and love in Champaign at one of the local theaters. He doesn't mention which theater, but he talks about how they had a boy singer and they had a rather run-of-the-mill vaudeville act. The boy singer suddenly said, "I want you to double my salary." And they said, "Go to hell, you're fired." And he said, in Champaign, the frat boys were known that if they didn't like the act, they would rip up the seats and throw them at the act on stage. So they developed this really bizarre routine of one person was playing the piano, the other Marx Brothers got into a fight, knocked the piano player off, and someone else replaced him without missing a beat. And that turned into what we now see in the movies.
Well, you know, if they were performing in vaudeville in Champaign, it would have had to be at either the Virginia or the Orpheum.
That's what I figured.
And the Orpheum was also an RKO theater. They were both vaudeville houses.
I will try and find that and Xerox it off and show it to you if I see you in the next couple of days.
My dad remembered that it was the Virginia. On the other hand, the first movie I was ever taken to see was A Day at the Races with the Marx Brothers, and that we saw at the Orpheum. I remember that day as if it were yesterday.
Hmm. If you're interested, I'll try and find it and show it.
Swell.
To you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call.
Okay.
You know, there was a brief time here when the Orpheum was the place where you could go see good runs and foreign films. And actually, I saw which was the one where Groucho was the dean of the college.
Oh, he's Professor.
Well, whatever it was, I know.
Duck Soup.
I saw that. I saw The Big Sleep. I'd also seen those movies on television, never on a big screen.
It's so important to see it with a big screen and the good sound and with the community of the audience there, seeing it with a group of people. Home video is terrific, and it makes it possible for people to see movies they couldn't see otherwise. But a real movie theater with a real audience is a real movie.
Yeah. Well, let's talk to someone here in Milwaukee. Gets the award for the furthest away caller here on line number four. Hello.
Nice to talk to you. Excuse me for bringing up a more commercial film for just a minute. I'm wondering if Roger Ebert has any opinion about the possibility of Warner Brothers is now mishandling Stanley Kubrick's films. And what I had in mind was, of course, Eyes Wide Shut is being released DVD and VHS with an essential section of it censored. And there's no warning on the box, of course. It doesn't say, warning, this film is censored. But beyond that, I'm also wondering about other films that they're releasing of Kubrick's. For instance, Full Metal Jacket, which I think the first section of is one of the best films ever made, that doesn't even have Letterbox. So I'm wondering, there was a lot
can I address that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to the letterboxing first. That's really a complicated issue. And Paul, it's a good thing that we have Paul Cox here to help us explain it. Kubrick personally did not like letterboxing. Now, it's an item of faith with me and with a lot of people that you want letterboxing because you want to see the same aspect ratio that the film was shot for. But Kubrick would look through the viewfinder and frame for both full screen and frame for within full screen a wider screen. And then what you get when you see a video of one of his films is the full width that you would have seen in the theater, plus additional head and foot room, so that the full screen is filled.
Huh.
That's a hard concept to visualize, but oddly enough, with pan and scan, usually they're taking away some of what you originally saw, but Kubrick's approach gives you more than what you saw in the theater. Isn't that...
Well, that's how it should be. I think he was totally right. Very often when they have the big Panavision films, you see them on television and half the next person is missing. Mm-hmm. There are many shots where people just walk out of frame. You think, well, that's badly framed. Because the film usually finishes up on television, you've got to keep that in mind. It's got to be shot with the widest frame possible. But you can very... the last film we shot on Super 35, and it is, of course... a totally different ball game to actually frame the film, and yet at the same time you know that most people will see it on television, so you've got to keep the ball rolling by keeping it round, you know, almost.
Mm-hmm. One film that is definitely letterboxed is 2001, which is in fact a widescreen movie, period. And but about the Eyes Wide Shut, I agree with you. There's an orgy scene in it where they created animated figures to stand in front of crucial parts of the orgy so that you can't see them in order to get the R rating rather than the NC-17 rating. And everybody, of course, expected the Austin Powers version is what I call it, that when it came out on video, there would be a director's cut that would be the way the film was originally made. And I saw it the way it was originally made, and you do see sexual acts going on, but in long shot and not graphically. And they did not do that. They still have the ridiculous censored little animated figures walking around. And in addition, there's one other thing they did on the video, and here I want to ask Paul for a judgment from an artist. People who saw the movie in the theater, were able to observe during a scene in the bathroom a moment when the camera and members of the crew are reflected in some chrome. And on the home video, the DVD, that has been scrubbed out digitally, so you can't see that reflection anymore. Now, of course, one justification would be it's a mistake and we fixed it. The other would be the DVD buyer is not getting the film that he saw in the theater. What do you think about that? It's obviously not something Kubrick wanted to have in there, but it is in there.
I think it's the same like if you make a painting and you sell it somewhere, and if somebody starts to butcher the painting or change the frame or take things off because it doesn't fit above the mantelpiece, that's a similar sort of mortal sin as fiddling with your film. You've made this film, it has been accepted, it has been screened that way, that is how it should travel. Anybody who tampers with that should be shot. Pardon me, should be hanged.
Isn't there an added absurdity here, though, in that the rest of the world is seeing the...
Yes.
Well, that's how absurd it is. Yes, the rest of the world sees it the way it is, yeah.
I've been fighting against the rating system for as long as I can remember. The United States is the only country in the civilized world with no functioning adult rating. Either a movie can be shown to people under 17 with the legendary adult guardian, or it cannot be shown at all in this country. NC-17 is a rating that is the kiss of death for exhibition in America. And it's all because Jack Fellini and his henchmen at the MPAA are tortured by nightmares that any person, even one person, would be turned away with $8 in their hot little hands because they weren't of the right age. Rather than miss one ticket sale, they will emasculate the entire American film industry.
Well, there was at one point an attempt, wasn't there, not to create a rating that said, this movie has adult content, and trying to get away, though, from the old
that
X
was my recommendation.
Rating?
That was my recommendation.
Yeah, but it's not only that. It's the total insanity of anything. Anybody can be shot, raped, and whatever, as long as there's no sex. I mean, this is insane. I read recently that somebody went to a hospital in New York, a little boy, screaming because he'd been shot in the leg, and he couldn't understand why it hurt. Now, this sums up the whole madness of allowing this to become part of the national psyche. Everybody's being shot and carries around guns. While a little bit of sex is totally bad for the population, and it's basically very hypocritical, you see.
I hope the caller will forgive me for kind of jumping in on him here, because we just have about 15 minutes left, and I have some other folks. And
good questions, though.
Like
thank
to,
you.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments of the call. Let's talk with somebody else. Let's see. Next, we'll go to Champagne, line number two. Hello?
Oh, hello.
Yes.
I see in the News Gazette that you're having women in film at 11 to 12:30.
Yes, really.
Paul is going to leave for that panel in 10 minutes.
Where will it be?
I don't know.
I think it's going to be on the second floor of the Illini Union on the Green Street side, and it's free.
Okay, thank you.
And you have 19 minutes to get there.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. To Urbana, line number three, for someone else. Hello.
Hi. I really, really enjoyed the first two movies last night. Too long. Anyway, I was wondering if you knew whether Dance Me to My Song, which was in last year's film festival, is available on video form.
I believe it is available on... I think it may be available on video. I don't think it's been released commercially in America. I'll tell you what, Reel.com, with whom I have no commercial association, this is not a plug, Reel.com sells and rents videos over the web, and they have a page devoted to the Overlook Film Festival with links for every single film that is available on video. You can find out if it's available there. I would also recommend, however, that you might consider supporting your local video store and going over there to get it. I know that – what's the name of the great video store here in town?
That's Rentertainment.
That's Rentertainment has made a special effort to get their hands on as many of these videos as they can. And in an age of mass market video stores that don't have real – good selections. I think That's Rentertainment deserves your support. That is a plug.
Yes, I've read
But if you go to Reel.com, you'll be able to find out if any of these films, which ones are available on video.
Okay. I was really impressed with it. That was the only one I had a chance to see last year, and I was impressed at the courage in that show.
That was another Australian film. It was written by a woman named Heather Rose, who also starred in it, and who is... a very brave woman who is lives in a wheelchair and communicates by a voice synthesizer. And, Paul, when she came out on the stage after Dance Me to My Song, there was a very emotional moment.
Mm. No, you mentioned the word courage. That was really... You've got to have courage in movies. People are so scared. This is a very courageous movie. It's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. But it's not for the squeamish.
But why is it not for... People will say, but it's not for an average audience. Why not? An average audience should see this film, you see.
Oh, I think they should, but there are people who could not deal with nudity.
You know, people who are unable to control their bodies because of a progressive disease...
Like most of us.
cannot necessarily always go around being dressed in a, you know, in a way to please middle class values. This is a woman who is desperately fighting a battle with life every single day. She has to deal with bodily functions. She has to deal with bathing. With, I mean, we all go to the bathroom, so why shouldn't we occasionally see it on the screen? Not in terms of some perverse image, but in terms of this brave woman trying to live her life as closely as she can on her own terms.
I fully agree. But I also have relatives who refuse to go to the movies just because they might hear a four-letter word. I really feel like they are missing out on some really important ideas.
Well, you know, life will have passed them by.
Yep, it has.
All right. Well,
life is a four-letter word.
That's true. Thanks.
We have just about 10 minutes in this part of Focus 580, talking with film critic Roger Ebert and director Paul Cox. Roger Ebert is here in Champaign-Urbana to host the second annual Overlooked Film Festival. One of the films that will be shown is A Woman's Tale. You can see that tonight at 10 at the Virginia Theater, and Paul Cox is the director of that film. Questions welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL.
Could I get in a free plug for tomorrow?
Yeah,
or
sure.
A plug for a free film tomorrow?
Sure.
There's a free family matinee at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Bring the kids. Virginia Theater. It's called Children of Heaven. It's a story about a brother and his younger sister. Through no fault of his own, he loses her shoes. They now have one pair of shoes between them. They have to go to school in shifts, because they're afraid to tell their parents. It's a film from Iran. It has subtitles. And we're showing it deliberately to show kids that if you're old enough to read, you're old enough to read subtitles. and we're going to allow older brothers and sisters to read them, or parents to read, you know, talking will be allowed during this film to read the subtitles. But it's a free movie at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
Okay.
And at 4 o'clock, we have the silent films with the live orchestra from Benton Harbor, St. Joe, Michigan, Concrete. They were a big hit last year with Potemkin, and they're back this year with The Last Laugh, and a surrealist film by Salvador Dali and Louis Buñuel called Un Chien Andalou.
Everyone should see that film at least once.
At least once.
Mm. All right. Compulsory.
Except let's, for the relatives of the previous caller.
Oh, well, okay. They might not like it. Let's talk with a caller here in Taylorville. It's line number 4. Hello?
My mother's hometown.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I wonder if the old art theater is still where it used to be back in the mid-60s, which is the last time I was there.
It hasn't moved. I looked. Oh, I went past it today, wonderful. And it's still there.
Yeah, I about this tyranny of the majority thing, Lonnie Guinier, I think it ought to be possible not to have to drive so much as 50 miles, not to have to drive more than maybe 10 miles to see a decent foreign movie, silent movie, art movie, etc. I had a number of suggestions for your next festival, and I think you'll probably agree with most of them, if not all. Plus, I have one of the funniest Hollywood anecdotes I ever came across recently to close with. But
well, we only have 7 or 8 minutes.
I'd rather have the anecdote.
All right. Yeah. This isn't, shouldn't take more than two and a half minutes here. I really think more people should see films like Eating Raoul, which I think is one of the funniest dark comedies of the last generation. Weekend at
the Godard film, yes.
Godard. I had something to say about silent film. I'm kind of crazy about it. It exists, needless to say, in another time and space. For example, a kiss in a silent movie is altogether other than anything that sound gave us. And I'm thinking also in terms of emotional impact. I really prefer silent films for the things like that, the snowball fight in Napoleon, the great parting scene, where the Renee Adorey party, I think she may never see her lover again in the big parade, and there was the Odessa Steps scene in Potemkin.
Yeah, that was last year we showed Potemkin. Are you going to come and see Last Laugh tomorrow?
This isn't the old German silent thing. This is something.
This is the old German silent thing.
Yeah.
By Murnau.
Well, I'd like to, but I'm kind of hamstrung transportation wise. Might I recommend?
I'll bet there must be somebody in Taylorville who recognizes your voice and is going to call you up and offer to drive you over. And I'm going to buy popcorn for that person when they walk in through the door with you.
I was thinking of the films of Norman McLaren, too, the short.
Yes.
Like that wonderful thing called Neighbors, where these two people beat themselves to death.
Now, I remember that.
They beat each other to death, excuse me. And foreign animated shorts, I remember this amazing Polish film called Games of Angels, which is about a memory of the concentration camps, and...
You know, I am so encouraged to hear you talking like this, because this is the way, I mean, you obviously have a very wide range of curiosity and taste about great film, and so many people just allow themselves to march down the primrose path toward this week's disposable piece of multiplex sausage. And I'm so encouraged by your enthusiasm.
Maybe you said you had a good Hollywood anecdote. Share it with us.
Yeah. All right. This is Raymond Chandler's perhaps his favorite. There was this Hollywood producer talking about how much fun it was. He didn't think it was fun at all being a producer. I think his name was Harry Tugend, and he was saying, "It's a lousy job. A lousy job. For example, I've got the starlet. I've got to promote her career. I've got to find vehicles for her that will advance her up the ladder to stardom. All the time while trying to prevent myself getting raped." And there was a rather simple, naive youth in the office, and he said, "Gracious, you don't mean she's a nymphomaniac?" And he scratches his ear, tug, and for a minute or two looks out the window, and then drawls slowly, "Well, She might be. She might be. If they could calm her down a little.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. Other than thanks very much for the comment. We have a couple of minutes here left. Let's talk with someone else in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make one suggestion. Not long ago, a couple years ago, as an adult, I might add, not as a college student at 19 or so, I chose to take a class on, I don't even remember the title of the class, it was by an EIU history professor who was wonderful, and it was on how to view films critically, how to get past the Hollywood junk that's out there and really, really view a film. And my suggestion would be, if you could do that for the adults of this community, granted, the people that go to your festival already probably do this, but there's so many people that miss so much because they don't know how to view a film critically. And I think if you could add that to festival as a precursor, would be just a tremendous advantage for everyone.
Well, you know, I don't know what I don't know what the answer is. How do you view a film critically? Pauline Kael said that when she went into a movie, she just took in everything that had ever happened to her and everything she knew, and she watched the movie, and then she tried to see what changed. Most movies, of course, don't change you at all. They just diminish you. But others can enhance your life.
If I may slip in something here,
yeah.
I think if somebody teaches you how to look at a film, you're already in the wrong seat. You should go there with a totally open mind. People are so conditioned to actually be entertained. Go to a film and give to the screen, even if it's for 10 minutes, because then you start receiving.
Yeah, I should clarify
it's
my
It's very
point
simple. Because the actual idea of people just don't get the chance to see good films. That's as simple as that. Good films are not being promoted. The people that stand in between the filmmaker and the screen are the exploiters, the distributors and the exhibitors, and most of them are in the business of selling sausages. They want bums on seats. They're not looking for fellow dreamers. So those people actually prevent others from seeing films that can change their lives. And it's I always feel I'm in some sort of a holy war trying to go, because I never do any PR, nothing. I just go and believe and have faith. It's some strange religion that sort of keeps me going. But I always believe that once you get to the people, there's an enormous rapport and enormous things happen. It is our function to actually, and it's every thinking, feeling, struggling person in the audience to actually pass on the message. That's how the ripple effect can happen. And that's the only defense you have against people that throw in millions and millions of dollars to have their films screened. You know, when you make a film for $1 million, you don't have $10 left to actually go and find somebody to promote it for you. And that's the big problem. It's our function to pass on the message.
Quite so. I don't know how people ask me, well, what are your, you have a checklist of things you look for when you go to a movie. And I say, no, I don't. Dwight McDonald was a film critic for Esquire magazine when I was in high school a long time ago. And he kind of was the first serious film critic I'd ever read. This would have been in the 50s. And he brought out a book called On Movies, his collected film criticism. And in the introduction to it, he said that when he started reviewing films, it was still in the silent period. And he made a list of 10 things to look for when going to a movie. And he reprints that list, and he goes through the list, pointing out how each one of those 10 things he was looking for is utterly invalid. For example, one of his points was, are the characters believable? And he realized that most of the movies that he liked, the characters were not believable. Is it well photographed? He says, well, what does that have to do with it? Most of the movies I don't like are very well photographed. And so he threw his list away, and he just said, the movie starts, and I watch it. And when it's over, I've seen it. And if I've and then I try to deal with what I saw and what I think about it. And I think that's kind of the approach that I have. I don't have an ideological checklist of things to look for. Although, of course, the more movies you see, the more good movies you see, good movies teach you what good movies can be.
I'm sorry to say, going to have to stop.
Ooh.
Because we've come to the end of the time. We want to say, though, very much thanks to Roger Ebert for being here. Film critic, Chicago Sun-Times, host of the second annual Overlooked Film Festival, and Paul Cox. His film, A Woman's Tale, will be shown as part of the festival at the Virginia Theater tonight at 10 o'clock. And there will be a full schedule of movies today, tomorrow, and then Oklahoma, Sunday at 1 o'clock. Even if you've seen it, you should go and you should see this.
Every single shot in this movie on Sunday will be different than every single shot the previous time you saw Oklahoma.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you both very much.